so don't bring
okay.
it up.
All right.
Okay, let's go ahead and reconvene. Next item on our agenda is public comment on the forest riparian easement program's rulemaking. We have two members of the public who have signed up to provide testimony. Sherry Fox, you are up first. Who's not usually on that side of the table.
Next to waiting.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, when you guys voted on the minutes, I said bye.
Yeah.
It's a hard habit to break.
Good morning and welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity to talk about the draft, and also welcome to the new board members and our regular board members. Like I told Carmen, she's in for a ride. So is the West of the P. So I had Patricia hand out a sheet so that you could follow along with my bullet points. So RIP rulemaking was initiated through House Bill 1509 last legislative session. So just some of the things that stand out to me is that it removes nonprofits from program eligibility. And even though this percentage is very small, the FRAPs requested the nonprofits. Was originally intended that we were losing profit from their ownership by having to set aside buffers that had a disproportionate impact. So in other words, the for-profit people was what the program was intended for. And this is something I probably worked on for about 4 years and we finally got it through last year. So, and we had support from the Environmental Caucus that this was the fair way to go. So. It expands the definition of qualifying timber to include unstable slopes. Our understanding from the FFR negotiation was that unstable slopes was always included, but now we have clarified the fact that these areas could deliver to streams and they should be allowed for the FRAP. And that was also a very huge negotiated item with DNR. With this addition to unstable slopes, the FRAP has a cap of $50,000 biennium funding period. And one of the reasons, there were several reasons why we did this, but one of the reasons that we did it was that because of the tough economic times, we were trying to balance a fair distribution of funds that are required for this program. So we had a situation where one or two FRAPs would have taken all of the FRAP money. And so we wanted, at least in these economic times, maybe if we get into a situation where we have more funding or a steady stream of funding, this can be reconsidered as a rule. But we'll see. Funds will be available to determine the value of the easements that are in the queue based on timber values. This will help the SFLO value the easements in backlog for purposes of reporting to the ledge and the governor's office for the needed future funding. And the importance of this is that when we go to the ledge and ask for funding, we never knew what we wanted because there were no timber values put on those FRAPs. And so we were basically guessing, taking an average of what FRAPs were going for and say we've got 50 backlogs at $80,000, you know, we need this much money. With this program, we will certainly be able to identify what the real cost will be for funding, and that's important when you're going to the ledge and asking them for funding. The date of the easement term will begin with the date the completed easement application, and that change was made because many times the harvest does not occur for a couple of years, or even more, if they get a renewal. So the term of the 50 years will start when the application, the completed application is received and not at the time of harvest. So this expands DNR authority to reimburse the landowners for preparation costs, i.e. geotech reports, boundary layout, marking of riparian trees, etc. The geotech reports can get fairly expensive, so this is a good one to include. And then a process to collect back funds from small landowners who within 10 years sell to large landowners. This is trying to eliminate the gaming of development in the RMZs. We've had some situations where small landowners would buy from large landowners and then in turn sell it back for development purposes. So they were winning both ways. And there were some folks out there that were saying, you know, you can get the forest riparian easement program, so here's my price. You know, so that was being used as a value added to the property, which was not ever the intent. So I have an addition to your current rulemaking that I would like the board to consider. And it's listed there in the three paragraphs. I'll start with House Bill 2091, which was the bill back in 2000 that established the Forest Riparian Easement Program and actually the Forest and Fish Act. So it reads, one thing I'm concerned about is the unaccepted liability portion of that rule. It does explicitly state that the landowner is free to use his property as it sees fit, provided the use must be consistent with other rules and statutes, including Forest Practices, GMA, Growth Management Act, for stop with the acronyms, right? Shoreland Management Act, and must protect riparian function. So in the current rule, we have stated unacceptable liabilities, but we have not included that the landowner has the right to use its property for free as it sees fit. And so my remedy to that language would be, and this would be the entire paragraph, in no event will the state be required to acquire a FRIP. Such FRIP would be subject to unacceptable liabilities. Liabilities incurred due to the presence of hazardous substances. And that's currently right now in a new section on page 19. And what I would like to suggest that you do is, for all other purposes, the FREP shall explicitly state that the small landowner is free to use his property as it sees fit, provided the use must be consistent with other rules and statutes, including forest practice, blah, blah, blah. So it basically just matches House Bill 2091, which was the law that put the FREP into statute. And so if you have any questions about where this area is, I can tell, what was it, 18? No, it's not where the language is at. It's under a new section, 222-21032, number 2, that has that exact language about unacceptable liabilities, but it does not include the language that the landowner has the right to use its ownership as it sees fit. Anything lawful within the RMZ should be legal. So I would ask that the board would add that language as you're going into your rulemaking.
Could you repeat where that is located?
It's new section WAC 222-21-032.
Page 19.
Line 34. Eligibility criteria, yeah, line 34. Any questions about that?
Yeah, I'm trying to understand, Chair. You're talking about adding the last paragraph to this section?
Right.
But not replacing any words that are already there. Just adding it to make it clear.
The language that I put on the bullet sheet, which is directly from House Bill 2091. So you have the authority in the statute to be able to make this addition already. This is not anything new. It just didn't get translated into the new rulemaking, which I think it's important that we know that the landowner can use their property in any other legal process within the RMZ. Had to get that in.
I know you did. I did want to point out one comment on number 3, where you talk about the cap of 50,000 per biennium. Mm-hmm. That is for the unstable slope feature of a FREP. So the FREP can be more than 50,000. It's whatever the value of that piece is. It's that the unstable slope portion of that can be no more than 50,000 per biennium. So I just want to clarify.
And also, there's no cap on RMZ protection thing that stays up, but it's just on the unstable slopes.
Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we have Ken Miller. Good morning, Ken.
Good. Happy Valentine's Day. I'm Ken Miller, a small forest landowner, about 100 acres of badly snow-damaged trees. It's a real pleasure being here today, particularly on a less contentious issue than the last meeting. So I'm here today representing Washington Farm Forestry Association in full support of the FRIP revisions that you have before you, including everything that my mentor, Sherry, just presented to you, and especially, I think, her last recommendation or addition. So my comments, not to repeat what Sherry said, but just to add a little perspective, particularly for some of the newer board members. In 2010, the legislature put the DNR in a very tough spot. It seemed to renege on the forest and fish promises to small landowners. To their credit, DNR worked through a very contentious process and developed the reasonable and appropriate FRIP structural fixes needed and passed then by the legislature in 2011. Among several other good things and some compromise that Sherry talked about, I believe being able to value the backlog and then stay current with those valuations will prove to be a particularly great value to the program. The changes fixed FRIP structurally. They reaffirmed the disproportionate impacts on smalls, and they have called attention to the critical need for long-term funding. DNR, Bridget, kicked off this funding recommendation effort with a very constructive first meeting last week, and we must find success on this long-term funding issue, or you know, all the efforts on FRIP will have been in vain. And lastly, I want to make special thanks, I believe, are in order to both Bridget and to Sherry for their extra work and effort and finding a way out of a very tough mess that we were in a couple of years ago. So thank you very much.
Thank you for that. I have to commend Sherry for that. If you were here with the board, I would have a special recognition for you. We've talked about this before. This legislation was very difficult, came out of a contentious prior year, and where the legislature got fairly involved in the administration of the program, and DNR had to report back to the legislature on a potential fix. Sherry and I worked diligently on that and challenged each other daily on that, and in the end came out with a solution that we all agreed to, and the legislature passed and the governor signed, and we're now trying to implement through rulemaking. So appreciate your leadership on that as well, Sherry. Okay, that ends public testimony on the FRIP rulemaking. Gretchen and Dan, let's come forward and walk the board through the proposal, please. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Dan Pomeroy. Small Forest Landowners Office.
I should introduce myself. We had it all planned out. I would introduce myself first, so here we are sitting here. I'm Gretchen Robinson, and I'm with the Forest Practices Division. I work on rulemaking projects and other policy projects, especially for the Forest Practices Board. And go ahead, Dan.
Okay. And my name is Dan Pomeroy. I work in the Small Forest Landowners Office, and I'm the I work with the Forest Riparian Easement as well as the Rivers and Habitat Open Space Program. And we are here today to request the board's approval to file a CR 102 for proposed rulemaking for this draft language that's in front of you. And this 102 will initiate the public public review of the rule. And just a little bit of background, I know Sherry did very well in giving the details of what this rule does. But basically, the House Bill 1509 was passed last year in legislature, and this bill is to be the statute is now in place, and so now we have this rule to replace the existing rule. So the staff, we in the fall of 2011, we enlisted the help of the Small Forest Landowner Advisory Committee and got their feedback, and we made some corrections to the rules with their feedback. And then we initiated the, we asked staff to distribute the rule language for the 30-day review with Fish and Wildlife, counties and tribes. And at that review period was concluded, and we did not receive any comment from those entities.
During that 30-day review period, we looked at the rules and did some editing, kind of to streamline the language. We also made some clarifications to the application and the evaluation processes. And we removed language that had to do with reimbursing landowners for stewardship plans if the small forest landowner requested them. We removed it because stewardship plans are not required by the statute, so we removed that language. Finally, we completed a preliminary cost-benefit analysis that's been available to you in your board materials to review. And the next step is to file draft language with the code revisor for publishing in the Washington State Register. And we, as usual, will be notifying everyone who is interested in knowing about forest practices rulemaking activities. We will notify our list that draft language is available for review and comment. So we'll also plan public hearings, and they should take place the end of March or early April, and we're expecting a final draft to go to you for your consideration for adopting a rule in May. So I'm sure that you'll have discussion about past board member Fox's insertion as you'd like to put in the language. So the action is that you would direct staff to file a CR-102 proposed rulemaking order, well, it's not an order, it's just called proposed rulemaking, and file the language with the code revisor so that it is published in the Washington State Register for public review.
And maybe just a reminder for board members and info for new board members that the legislature appropriated $1 million this biennium to purchase reps, and we can't begin that process until the new rules are in place. And so we are eager to see this move forward so that we can have the final rules adopted in May so that we may proceed with purchases of reps, which do take some time. So just clarification of process for everybody. Okay. Any questions about the briefing? Okay, there is a motion if anybody wishes to make it. No.
I move the Forest Practices Board approve for public review the draft rule proposal amending Chapter 222-21 Forestry Riparian Easement Program. These changes will reflect the 2011 legislation, House Bill 1509. Further move the board direct staff to file a CR-102 with the Office of the Code Revisor to initiate permanent rulemaking.
Second. Thank you. Motion seconded by Dave. Thank you. Discussion?
Question?
Yes, Noah.
You brought it up, and Sherry Fox had brought it up. This language that she has proposed for an insertion, was that something that was considered in the drafting of this rule?
No, it was not. And this is the first I've heard of the proposal.
Okay.
I'm familiar with what she's speaking of, though, with the reference to the previous bill that was passed back in 2008. 2000.
Okay, so it is your understanding it was in the legislative...
In the RCW.
In the RCW, but has not been specifically included in the rule proposal.
That's correct.
Okay.
So I have...
Just a moment, yeah. Staff, did you want to make a comment regarding that?
Just one suggestion that you could consider. In looking at this, I'm not sure it fits really well as an eligibility criteria, but it could go on the previous page, 18, sub 4, starting on line 35, which has some provisions for the contract, for the FRE contract. And we could start, or at the end of that sentence, if you turn to Sherry's language, I would suggest starting at the second sentence, replace for all other purposes of the FRE, replace that with the FRE contracts shall explicitly state, et cetera, to the end of that sentence, and stick it into there in sub four where it specifies provisions of the contract. It seems to me that would be a better fit.
What was that amendment?
Okay. Thank you. So moved.
I'll second that.
Thank you. Moved and properly seconded. So for clarification, we would be moving the section about how the use of the property is allowed over into the contract terms, which is recommended by staff as a more appropriate location for that that section.
So
we're on line 37, page 18. Discussion on the amendment. Yes, Mark.
Just a question, and I don't have the statute in front of me, obviously. So I'm not sure if the wording is exactly the same. It appears that maybe there's a little bit of awkwardness or some misspelling or grammar or whatever. So in this rulemaking process, I would think that any changes around that would not be considered substantive, as long as they fit within the intent of this language.
Yes, I would agree. And DNR staff do exercise some discretion as far as proper grammar and language and placement in the statute so that it's clear but not altering the intent. And I would remind the board that this would be the rule language that would go out for public comment. So there's still an opportunity to comment on this. We're not at final rule adoption. So we're just recommending a place to put this language so that as we go out for public comment, the public will have an opportunity to include this in their comment. Yes.
Before the amendment, I was going to ask the question, but my question's been answered because I wanted to make sure that Sherry's information was given the opportunity for public.
Awesome.
So thank you.
Great. So, any other discussion on the amendment? Okay, I'll call a question on the amendment. All those in favor of the amendment as described by Tom and by Dave and seconded by Tom, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Great. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Now we go back to the underlying rule and the motion, which is before us and properly seconded, to direct staff to file with the Office of the Code Advisor the now amended rule for CR 102. We have further discussion on the main motion. Okay. Hearing none, I will call the question. All those in favor of directing staff to file the CR 102 to move the FREP rulemaking to the 102 phase, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Okay. Next item on our agenda is another piece of legislation that required rulemaking. We have public comment period that nobody has signed up for. This is what is known as the Conversion Activities and Lands Platted After 1960 rulemaking. Gretchen, welcome back. See if you can describe this one in a way that everybody can understand, and that's not about your skills.
I'm going to be relying heavily on my notes.
Okay. Welcome. Please have.
Again, I'm Gretchen Robinson, and Madam Chair and members of the board, I would like to request your approval to begin rulemaking related to conversions of forest lands for non-forestry uses. This rulemaking is part of the 2012 work plan for the board. So it's on that list. So in recent years, there have been changes to the Forest Practices Act that we have not yet incorporated into the rules related to conversions of forest lands for non-forestry uses. For example, 2011 legislation eliminated all references to lands platted after January 1st, 1960. This made it so that forest practices on these lands are no longer automatically assumed to be converting to a non-forestry use, and therefore not, and also not automatically classified class four. So we need to delete the lands platted language from the class four definition in chapter 22216, WAC, that is our definitions chapter. And several sections of chapter 22220 WAC, which is the applications and notifications chapter. We also need to insert in chapter 20 the notice of conversion to non-forestry use, which is a notice that's, that is in the process associated with instances where landowners are conducting conversion activities without approved forest practices applications for such activities. The process was added to the Forest Practices Act in 2007, and it should be in the rule. It is being implemented, but it should be in the rule. Finally, we'd like to take this opportunity to do some editing work in Chapter 20. We've noted several areas of Chapter 20 that could be in plainer English, more user-friendly to the reader. And we would really like to take the opportunity to do some of those things during this rulemaking. Rulemaking begins when an agency publishes a CR 101 pre-proposal statement of inquiry in the Washington State Register. This statement lets the public know that an agency is considering rulemaking on a particular subject and that anyone who wishes to can be involved in the rule development rulemaking process. So we plan to work, definitely plan to work with the Washington State Association of Counties during rule development because the changes involve local governmental jurisdiction issues. And we'll also work with all of our usual agencies and stakeholders during rule development. So we expect to have a draft ready for you in time for your August meeting. And then you can decide on further action. Further action will be either a 30-day review, or if the current legislation passes, we'll be skipping that phase of rulemaking for forest practices, and we'll just go into the CR 102 stage, which is the stage that we're going proceeding with the FRAP rulemaking now. So, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Just add for the clarification for the board that this is a piece of legislation that passed last session that had a bit of a sort of legacy piece existing in the Forest Practices Act that really wasn't providing any protection but causing us additional work with really very little benefit. So it was catching particular types of activities as class four when they didn't need to be. And so staff worked with the counties to have this revised, and now we're going through the rulemaking process, and staff are asking for additional authority to do some cleanup work. Reminder, this is the 101 phase, introduction of rulemaking, many steps to follow. So I think this is a good one, and I urge everybody's support. So any discussion, questions for Gretchen before we contemplate a motion? Yes, David.
Just a quick clarification. So you mentioned in your memo, excuse me, current legislation that might be passed this session. And so the 102 would incorporate any legislation or include language to implement. Right.
There will be time to see what legislation does pass and see if incorporating whatever is in it into this rule is appropriate. There will be time because we have from now through July to get the new language to.
Right. There are areas of similarity that if 6406 passes, would be included in here, and that's particularly around the notice of conversion activity I'm expecting,
yes,
as well
is.
As the 30-day review.
It is, and that isn't the bill that is associated with, I forget the number of the bill.
Is it?
Or is it? 2253.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
So there are other bills that may have implications to this, so we'll take that up at the August meeting, it sounds like.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
We'll be watching the legislation.
Any other questions for Gretchen on staff report regarding this rulemaking? Okay, hearing none, we have a motion if anybody wishes to put one forward. Somebody please.
It's my extreme pleasure to move that the Forest and Practices Board direct staff to file CR 101 pre-proposal statement of inquiry to notify the public that the board is considering making the rulemaking to incorporate Forest Practices Act amendments related to forest land conversion.
Second. Thank you. Bill has second for that. Thank you very much. We have a motion properly seconded. Any discussion or question regarding the conversion activities in lands platted CR 101? Okay, hearing none, I call a question. All those in favor of considering providing notice to the public regarding rulemaking and filing a 101, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we have two items of rulemaking left. Next item, Sherry, could please come forward. This is regarding the notice of forest practices to affected Indian tribes. We heard a little bit about this morning, and wanted to just remind the board that this is the 103 phase, so we would be in final adoption, which is why we don't have additional public comment, because the public comment period has already closed. So with that, Sherry, please go ahead.
Good morning again, Chair, members of the board, Sherry Felix, Forest Practices Division. And yes, it is my pleasure to request your adoption of the rule proposal titled Notice of Forest Practices to Affected Indian Tribes that is in your board packet. The intent of this rulemaking is twofold. One, improve WAC 222-20-120, Notice of Forest Practices to Affected Indian Tribes by clarifying language and resolving issues with the required landowner tribe meeting. And correct the riparian outer zone clumping strategy in WAC 222-30-021, Western Washington RMZs, by replacing old Class 4 special language with the new Class 4 special language the board adopted in the previous historic sites rulemaking. The public review and comment process has been completed for this rule proposal. The process included two rulemaking hearings. The board received 8 comments on the proposed language. The comments ranged from support of the language as proposed, to suggested changes to the proposed title and subsection 2. Written comments and staff responses are part of the concise explanatory statement that is in your board. After consideration of the comments, staff is recommending the board adopt without modification the same rule language you approved for public review. The reasons for this no change recommendation are as follows. One, this language is the long deliberated, high value consensus recommendation from the TFW Culture Resources Roundtable. The Roundtable's consensus language came before the board 3 times, the 30-day review, the title change, and most recently at your last meeting in November, after the Roundtable deliberated on a couple of modifications. The Roundtable then reconfirmed this consensus language was ready for public review. So adopting the language unchanged that's been thoroughly vetted by the Roundtable stays true to that consensus language. 2, while changing the WAC title is not necessary, it does not change the underlying requirements in that WAC. It does alert the reader that the rule addresses both notice to tribes and cultural resources. And 3, currently the department is made aware of cultural resources via data from the Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation. We then confirm with that department and then require the landowner tribe meeting. The department also requires the landowner tribe meeting when a tribe tells us there is a cultural resource. This would not change under the roundtable's consensus language. If you decide to adopt rules today for this rulemaking, staff will finalize the concise explanatory statement for your rulemaking file and file with the code revisor a rulemaking order along with the adopted rule language and the economic analysis. The adopted rule would then become effective in late March. At this point, I imagine you have some discussion, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions regarding process of how we got here or any of the particular words as put forth? Okay. Hearing none then, regarding questions, I'm sure we'll have discussion once there's a motion on the table. I expect that there is a motion coming. Okay.
Surprise!
If there is one available.
I'll wait. Since I was at all the hearings, I move that the Forest Practices Board adopt the rule proposal amending WAC 22-220-120 to clarify language related to landowner tribe meeting requirement of WAC 22-230-21, sub 1C2 to replace old class 4 special language with class 4 special language adopted in 2008. I further move the board direct staff to file a CR 103 with the code advisor, Office of the Code Advisor.
Is there a second?
Awesome.
Thank you, Paul. just for clarification, the WAC citations
did I miss one? No.
Are properly written on the motion. And we will ensure that they are filed appropriately with the code advisor. Having stated that, discussion. There's been a lot of conversation regarding adoption of this rule, and I would expect that perhaps some members may have some question or desire for discussion. Yes.
Do we have a second?
Yes, we
do. I was very impressed. We had quite a bit of testimony on this, I think, at the public hearings. And I appreciated the discussion that we had. It's clear that there's potential for things to need to be worked out, I think, as we go ahead with this. I think there's opportunity for that. It's not clear to me that there is a better alternative to this. This has been worked for years, as was pointed out earlier. And so I think we need to go with it, see how it works. I think we got good faith by all the different players. I feel like if there are glitches, if there are difficulties that crop up, that the DNR can take a hand in it to a certain extent. We can work that out. And if we can't, then we'll have to come back to the board and look at a change. But I feel like it's a significant step forward, and we need to make it at this time.
Yes,
Bob. Yes, new board member here, so I'm just not doubting the process at all, and I'm not doubting what was talked about here, but I am concerned about the issues that was brought forth this morning to make sure that there is an opportunity to continue talking about the process, as you stated. So, thank you.
Dave.
Thank you. Board member here that looked to bring the interest of tribes to this table, paid attention to particular attention to this issue, and tribes certainly have lots of things in common. We do have our differences as well, and some of us we do our own processes in our own ways. So there's been a lot of time invested in developing this approach here. It was a consensus-based approach. I think the important thing here is to make sure we have a process where tribes get notified of activities in their areas of concern, and they have the opportunity then to respond and engage with a landowner, and I think that while maybe this isn't the perfect solution for everybody, I think it's something that we've put enough time into that I think we need to move forward and see how it works. I'm sure we'll track how it works, and if there's problems that come up that we hadn't anticipated, then we'll have to be prepared to adaptively manage, I guess, in the future to address those things. Tribes are certainly sovereign nations as well. So we always have the ability to engage in government-to-government relation with consultations with different governments, with the department, with the state, with federal. So, you know, that avenue is still going to be out there and available, and many of us may choose to do that if, you know, we don't get the satisfaction at the level dealing with the through the process we're setting up here. So I think that given all of that, I'm prepared to support moving forward with this today.
Thank you for your comments. Yes, Norm.
Well, at least all of the veteran members of the board know that I've brought concerns for this rule, and for the new ones, I will briefly reiterate those. But I will also say that I did have opportunity to meet with the Cultural Resources Roundtable in an effort to resolve these. We didn't, to my satisfaction, but I am prepared to move forward with the rule as it has been proposed, while still holding on to some concerns. And I think that if those concerns do arise, then we will, this board will need to take another look at the implementation of it, if there are modifications that would need to be made at that time. Part of the concern is, again, to reiterate, and for the new board members, that we potentially are adding significantly to the process that a landowner may have to undertake when there are cultural resources concerns that are raised. Hopefully that does not come up. I have to trust that the landowners, that the tribes, that the department will all operate in good faith in a way to be in the true spirit of TFW and the true spirit of problem solving. In the event that that doesn't happen, then I guess this issue will come back before the board in whatever circumstance that may happen to be. So I appreciate the work of the roundtable and the board in listening to those concerns. And for the record, I still have them, but I will support. Thank you.
Thank you, Norm, and I appreciate you reiterating those for the new board members as well. And I can tell you from a DNR perspective, you absolutely have our commitment to bringing a good faith effort and bringing trust to the table to ensure that we implement this as fairly as we can. Yes.
One last thing I forgot, and it goes a bit to what Serrera said. It would be very good for the board to hear a report at some point as to, from the roundtable or just from DNR staff, forest practice staff, as to how this is being implemented and how it's working and if there are issues that do arise.
Okay, we'd be happy to.
Any other discussion regarding the motion? Final adoption. Okay, hearing none, I call the question of considering final rule adoption for the Notice of Forest Practices to Affected Indian Tribes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. We're on a roll. Okay, last agenda item of the day is critical habitat rulemaking. And Sherry, you are on again. And Mark. Mark, are you coming forward as well? Your name's on the agenda.
Let me just take a moment and invite all board members, new and old, to any roundtable meeting that you want to attend. They're held the third Tuesday of every month, starting at 9 a.m. at the Office of the Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation. Our agendas and our meeting notes are also on the board's website, as well as our charter.
Great. And I will ensure that Patricia sent that out to everybody.
So I just want to make sure that board members, if several are planning on going to a roundtable meeting, it's very important to notify the department, because if more than seven of you, a quorum of you, are planning to attend an outside meeting, that can constitute a meeting of the board. So it's okay for you to go, but we have to go through other notice processes in order to make that happen. Everybody understand that?
Yes.
Thanks.
Yes, and then we'll cover this. Excellent. Okay, critical habitat rulemaking. Sherry and Mark, you are on.
Hello, I am here again, this time to ask your adoption of proposed amendments to the board's critical habitat rule. I'm Sherry Felix, and beside me is...
Good morning, I'm Mark Kingle. I'm the chair and members of the board, and again, welcome all the new board members for me too, and I'll be talking to all of you later today.
Okay, the purpose of this rulemaking is to make the board's critical habitats rule consistent with changes to the federal and state laws, as well as a name change to one of the species on the board's list. Specifically, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service removed the bald eagle and the peregrine falcon from the federal list of endangered and threatened wildlife. The Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission removed the bald eagle and the peregrine falcon from the state's threatened or endangered species lists. The Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission also amended its bald eagle protection rule, so that rule applies only when the bald eagle is listed under state law as threatened or endangered. And the updated common and scientific names for the western pond turtle are recommended by three North American scientific societies and recognized by the Department of Fish and Wildlife. As previously discussed with you, bald eagles and peregrine falcons continue to be protected under the Federal Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act and the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, as well as the state's protected species list, which means no hunting of the species. The name changes for the pond turtle don't affect the board's rule that protects that species. At your last meeting, you directed staff to conduct the public review process for the rule proposal as required by the Administrative Procedures Act. Staff then filed with the code revisor the proposed rule and preliminary economic analysis, circulated the environmental analysis as required by the state's Environmental Policy Act, and held two rulemaking hearings. Three comments were received from this public review. All comments supported the rule proposal as written. A summary of these comments and staff's responses are part of the concise explanatory statement that's in your board packet, as well as the written comments. Staff is not recommending any changes to the rule as proposed. The proposed amendments were developed by staff in consultation with the Wildlife Work Group. This is a multi-stakeholder group convened by Department of Fish and Wildlife as needed. And regular attendees include the Departments of Fish and Wildlife, Natural Resources, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Conservation Caucus, and the Washington Forest Protection Association. Additionally, DNR and WDFW staff have been working on some operational implementation projects, and Mark has those updates for you.
Okay, so in earlier discussions before the board for the veteran board members, there was the desire that landowners would still be made aware of the fact that the eagle, and this is specifically the bald eagle, still is under protection again of the two acts, the federal acts, and in fact under the jurisdiction now of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So there was an agreement made that we would develop a fact sheet and make the fact sheet available to all landowners. At first we would widely distribute it to everybody, a shotgun approach, and then later when a harvest is proposed near an existing bald eagle circle. At this time, the fact sheet is not entirely developed yet, although we are working on it. Primarily, Department of Fish and Wildlife is working with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to develop the fact sheet. DNR will also be involved as the get their first draft out. We are going to also, we have made a commitment to also make the links to the federal information available through the DNR webpage, so that when people come on our page looking for the necessary maps and the forest practice application, they'll also see that there is a fact sheet and there is a link to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife site, which provides them the, you know, help me out, Dave, I don't know what the title is, but the voluntary, go ahead, the guidelines.
Are you talking about the Fish and Wildlife Service? Yeah, they have a self-certification system for landowners to signal that they commit to implementing the protections of the Eagle Act.
So I just want to bring forward to you folks that we do plan on having the fact sheet available and the links posted on the effective date of this rule. When the board adopts the new rule, I'll be optimistic. So thank you.
Thank you both. Are you okay?
I'm not quite.
I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
Gotta get these particulars.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. So, if you decide to adopt the rule today, staff will finalize the concise explanatory statement, file the rulemaking order with the Code Advisor's Office with the adopted language and the economic analysis, and this rule also would then become effective in late March of 2002. So, now
thank you for 2012. Did you say that
2002?
We were all younger then.
I'm
thank you. Thank you for that. I want to, for the new board members' purposes, let you know that there was a healthy discussion about removal of federal protection and concern that there was going to be a gap of landowners being made aware about remaining responsibilities to protect bald eagles. In particular, DNR worked with our sister agencies to ensure through our administrative procedures that landowners would be made aware, screening of apps would still occur, notification would occur, and the guidelines would be linked to our site as well as this fact sheet. So I think we have closed that gap and addressed all the concerns. There have been no remaining concerns brought to our attention that our administrative approach has not addressed that I'm aware of. Okay, so I just wanted to close the loop on that because we had a pretty healthy discussion about that the last few meetings. And yes, David, please go ahead.
Just for the board and the public's information, in addition to all of the state administrative tools that we either are implementing and will continue, or new ones that we're going to put into action if the rule is adopted, we've been talking with the Federal Service, Fish and Wildlife Service, and I'm glad to report that we had a pretty, I think, constructive meeting a little while ago, DFW, and they're going to also make some administrative changes to their self-certification process under the Vulnerable Eagle Protection Act, and they have a greatly improved tracking mechanism that they're going to be putting in place so that they can utilize the state process, track FPAs in terms of those people that have agreed to implement the Vulnerable Eagle Protection Act mechanisms, or people that are going to deviate from those. And then also, you know, the federal process allows landowners to get an actual take permit if they can't kind of minimize the potential impacts. So they have a way now to track those, that set of forest practices in conjunction with all of the FPAs that we tell them are within a certain distance, and therefore they can actively contact the landowners versus before they were just kind of sitting back and hoping that everybody would self-report. So I think between the state and the federal processes, we've got a really good safety net there that will enable us to go forward with this rule.
Thank you for that. And what David's politely saying is that we hoped for and did get federal participate or federal partners to help where they could as well, so that it wasn't exclusively on the state. So it's been a good discussion, and we've been able to achieve what we wanted to. So it's been very productive. Other questions are from the staff briefing? We'll have a motion here in a moment. We can discuss in more detail.
Yes, thank you very much. I move that the Forest Practices Board adopt the rule proposal amending WAC 222-16080, critical habitat state of threatened and endangered species. These changes reflect the change in federal and state listings of the bald eagle and the peregrine falcon, respectively, and the common and scientific name changes of the western pine turtle. I further move the board direct staff to file a CR 103 with the Office of the Code Revisor.
Second. Thank you, Mark. Motion properly second. Discussion. Yes, Paula.
I just wanted to thank the agencies for working through some of the issues that were raised. There was good substantive discussion at the board, and I appreciate that and appreciate the efforts that were taken in the wildlife work group functioned well, and you all took into account the concerns that were raised and addressed them. So I just wanted to appreciate that.
Appreciation is appreciated, especially with limited staff time, so thank you. Yes, Dave.
I'd just like to take a couple of moments. This is hopefully going to result in kind of a culmination of quite a bit of effort. It seems like it's been a long process, and I appreciate Paula's comments. We have done a lot of outreach and a lot of discussions with all the stakeholders, including the Federal Service, and appreciate DNR's assistance on this. They've been a great help. And a lot of the administrative options that are going to be put into place are because of DNR commitments. And they stepped up to the plate and are doing that in the absence, what will be an absence of a rule, which is, I think, a good way to go. It, you know, just in the absence of rule doesn't mean that we can't help landowners get to the right outcomes in terms of protection. So, you know, the eagle is a success story. You know, it's been downlisted and delisted for quite some time, as has the falcon. The eagle, you know, it had its issues with DDT and chemicals, but habitat loss is also a big deal that this board regulates. And so, I appreciated the comments from the landowners this morning relative to their contribution. We have hundreds of bald eagle management plans out there that are right now no longer effective, but it helped us get to this stage. So we're confident that all of these options that we're putting into place will hopefully keep this what now is a common species common, which is one of our primary goals for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. It's not just to recover, but then also to protect so that we don't have to relist in the future. So I just wanted to make those statements and again, thank DNR for their help on that and all the contributions from the stakeholders.
Thank you, Dave. I would be remiss if I didn't point out that this is an additional administrative step that DNR is undertaking. It's these steps that we do take on time and time again that add to our burden and our ability to fully implement the act. And so while we think this is the right thing to do, it is one more thing, and you've heard me say this before, but it's part of the reason we're all seeking to ensure that the program is properly funded and stable, because there are little things like this that we take on almost at every board meeting. And we chose the administrative approach in lieu of a rule because it's the right thing to do here, but that doesn't mean that that doesn't bring additional work to the department. And so we did step up to do this because it was a concern a lot of stakeholders have. We think it's the right thing to do, but I didn't want to let it go without mentioning that it is more work. And in the time of shrinking budgets, more work is something that we're highly sensitive to. So, for the record. Okay, any other discussion regarding the motion? Okay, hearing none, I'll call the question of considering final rule adoption of critical habitat rulemaking. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. So new board members have just gone through the rulemaking process and almost every step of it at different points. So you've seen that. We'll go through all of that. We'll go through all of that this afternoon. For the record, let the record show we ended 5 minutes early. And have that's right. Excuse me. We are not completed. My apologies. We forgot about something. We are not. We're still in session. So we do need to have an executive session to discuss legal matters. And so I would ask that all members of the public, anybody who is not staff to the board, to please step out. That will last approximately 15 minutes, at which time I will then reconvene the meeting and then end it. So you're welcome to return or not.
And just to be clear, the purpose of the executive session is to discuss litigation or reasonably anticipated litigation.
Yes, thank you. For the record, to discuss litigation or reasonably anticipated litigation. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to work.